Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I think a lot of people in the media and so-called, you know, hockey experts and analysts were probably picking Edmonton as well. So we kind of felt like the underdog in that series. So, you know, it's a cool role to play. I think it's exciting for our team when everyone's kind of counting you out and no one's really giving you a chance. So, you know, like Johnny said, I think Vegas is a really good hockey team. Just from watching them in games here during their round robin, they're very detailed, very structured. And it's going to be a tough test for us, and I think we know that as a team. So, you know, we really need to stick to our game plan and play that way. But I think all of us in our locker room are excited about the challenge and excited about the underdog role.
That's Patrick Kane. Doesn't he sound excited? Yeah, Vegas is pretty good. They're the top seed for a reason, and they're deep. They roll a bunch of lines at you, but hey, Hawks have made it this far. Why not? It's hockey. Anything can happen. Puck luck and everything else that's creating variance these days. Charlie Romeliotis is on Twitter, at Charlie Romeliotis. I don't know who'd steal that Twitter handle from him. He is NBC Sports Chicago's Blackhawks insider. He's on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Charlie, how are you?
Good morning, Dan. And for the record, I want to give Patrick Kane a little bit of behind the curtain. I predicted the Blackhawks in 5 games, so I am not part of those so-called hockey media experts that picked against them.
Well, and the one person at NHL.com, I want to say 15 of their 16 experts picked Edmonton, and one person thought the Blackhawks could do it. But what do you take away from the Oilers series that you think is real and sustainable and something that the Blackhawks can actually hang their hat on as doing well and continuing to do well?
Well, I think the emergence of Kirby Dach has really given the Blackhawks two pretty solid top two lines. And I think the most encouraging part about that Edmonton series is they beat the Oilers in 4 games, and Patrick Kane wasn't nearly at his best. Alex DeBrincat wasn't at his best, and Corey Crawford wasn't at his best for the first 3 games. And he kind of turned back into Corey Crawford for game 4, but we don't know, you know, what is he turning a corner? Is he going to start to look like Corey Crawford going forward, or was it just a fluky game? So I think it's encouraging that they won, and they weren't really near their best as a team. And we saw, you know, Jonathan Toews' line obviously had a nice breakout game, and the power play scored 3 goals in the first game. So I think there was a, you know, bits and pieces to like, but this is a very different Vegas team where they throw 4 lines at you, and the Edmonton Oilers were all about staying out of the penalty box and containing Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl at even strength. But the Vegas Golden Knights will make you pay on every single line, so it's important that the Blackhawks don't just get contributions from their top 2 lines in this series. They have to get it from their bottom 6 as well.
I want to correct your Twitter handle, by the way. It's capital C, Romeliotis, at C, Romeliotis. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate that. I'm going to point the finger, not the thumb on that.
Jay's looking out for us.
Yeah, right. The Blackhawks' approach to their defensive pairings has got to be a little bit different now, considering you can't just target that top line. You can't just look at, well, we can't let Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl beat us, and we're going to have Toews on the ice, and we're just going to match up there with a back check and protect everybody. How would you spread out and just make sure that they get depth of defense against, like you say, these waves of skill?
Yeah, it's going to be of certainly a storyline to follow in this matchup, because it's easy, you know, especially as the home team for the Blackhawks like they were in, in game 3 and 4, you know, you get to play those matchups and you get to put out the defensive pairings that you want against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And for the majority of that series, you know, the Blackhawks really wanted their shutdown pairing of Calvin DeHaan and Connor Murphy out there. And we also saw something towards the late, you know, usually towards the third period, where Adam Boqvist didn't see a lot of ice time. And so Duncan Keith was out there with Connor Murphy. He was out there, you know, Murphy was out there with Calvin DeHaan. The Mata Kuku pairing was out there. So, it, you know, obviously Adam Boqvist is, he's on a slower progression than Kirby Dach. We're seeing this huge emergence from Kirby Dach and taking this next step in the postseason. And Adam Boqvist is, you know, his progression is maybe a little bit slower. So I think it's something to monitor how they're going to play these matchups, you know, against a four-line team like the Vegas Golden Knights, where you can't really hide a guy like Adam Boqvist. You're going to need all those six players going, especially if you're, you know, trying to protect a lead in the third period.
The Mata Kuku pairing is fascinating to me. Kuku's playing better, and Mata, he giveth and he taketh away, because he does have a real understanding and a veteran's knack for trying to make up for his inability to skate. And he's solid on the offensive end, but I'm just nervous every time that we're going to have a blow by when he's out there.
It's really strange. Like, you know, if you look at the analytics, they're one of the best. They've been one of the top pairings for the Blackhawks since they got put together on a line or on a pairing, you know, early, what was it, February? And so it's really strange, because you don't look at those guys as possession drivers or you know, even on the flip side, defensive stalwarts back there, you know, but they're getting the job done. And it was funny to see, you know, Olli Maatta scoring back-to-back games, and Slater Cuckoo, I think, had a point in three of those four games against Edmonton. And so they're getting the job done. And I think if you're a Hawks fan, you're, you know, trying to stay hopeful that can carry over to the Vegas series, because if that pairing isn't going, and then you have Adam Boqvist, who's maybe a little bit struggling against a Vegas team that can come at you a wave, then I guess it could get a little bit dicey. And that's where you're really going to need Corey Crawford to be at his best.
I heard some comments from Jonathan Toews that were, I don't know if they're a little coy regarding what they know about Robin Lehner if they see him. What I know about Robin Lehner is he's unconventional and sometimes aggressive and coming out at weird angles and body positions to just sort of smother pucks. I also know when things aren't going well for him, the rebound control is an issue. And what the Hawks did well in that last series was, even with Duncan Keith out there, getting the puck on the net, getting it through defenders' legs, getting it to the net. I love greasy goals. As Andrew Shaw once said, I love shin pads. And when you start, when not everything has to be pretty, when not everything has to be tic-tac-toe to an open half of the net, Lehner will give you some of those opportunities.
Yeah, and we saw a lot of the Blackhawks score a lot of those greasy goals against the Oilers. And, you know, Matthew Highmore scored a few of them, and Dominic Kubalik scored a few of them, and even Jonathan Toews, that game-winning goal, you know, where he scored with a minute and 16 seconds left. You know, I know he, you know, it went off his shin pad, or it went off Ethan Bear's stick, and then off Jonathan Toews. But you get rewarded if you go to those dirty areas, and I think it's crucial against a Vegas team that has Robin Lehner in that, because he's a big goaltender, and you need to take away his eyes. And you know, unfortunately for the Blackhawks, there are no shootouts, so they don't have an advantage in this area, but. You know, Robin Lehner is obviously, he's one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, and they acquired him for a reason, especially, you know, going into this postseason. So I don't really know, to be honest with you, who has an advantage. You know, Pete DeBoer was talking about it the other day, that he was picking Leonard's brain on what to look out for against Chicago, and apparently Lehner, you know, singled out Dominic Kubalik, who's got an underrated shot. And so I think the Blackhawks obviously know how, you know, I don't want to say they know how to solve him or beat him, but they know his tendencies, and I think they just have to take his eyes away in front of the net.
Weird question. Who's the Blackhawks' number two goalie?
Well, let's hope we don't have to find out, right?
Yeah, but I know maybe it's a given game, or maybe, but it happens sometimes. And the fact that Corey Crawford is recovering from COVID-19, who knows? It's just something I would like to know who's next.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Vegas handles it too, because there's a back-to-back in this series, and maybe Vegas has the luxury of going to Marc-Andre Fleury for the second of a back-to-back, or, you know, the three games in four nights kind of thing. And the Blackhawks can't afford that, right? Like, I think, you know, obviously Malcolm Subban has been backing up Crawford, so it makes it seem like he would be the next guy in line. But, you know, Colin Delia is really the guy that has gotten more reps over the last few years because he's been in Rockford as the starter. But Malcolm Subban is obviously, you know, maybe a little bit more ahead of the curve as far as NHL experience and serving as the backup for Vegas for 3 years and even during their Stanley Cup run too. So he's, you know, maybe he's been a part of something like this where he's been a run and been in the locker room for something like this. But boy, oh boy, if Corey Crawford, for whatever reason, can't go, like gets injured or whatever, like the Blackhawks are in trouble.
How would you rate the job that Jeremy Colliton has done so far?
Pretty solid. And, you know, what I've always said about Jeremy Colliton, he's not afraid to make the tough decisions, right? Like earlier in the season, he healthy scratched Brent Seabrook twice. He healthy scratched Dylan Strome. And, he's not afraid to make those difficult decisions, but it's so difficult as a young coach where you're coming into a locker room where you have multiple Stanley Cup winners and they're looking at you as, you know, someone that has never been a head coach in the league and trying to prove himself. And he's trying to prove that, you know, I want to put the best lineup on the ice to win. And I think he's still learning as far as in-game matchups. I think we've seen maybe he sticks with a line too much, or if a line isn't going, like, you know, even Alex Nylander, I know, hasn't been the best trade for the Blackhawks, but sometimes he gets a little bit of a longer leash and, you know, he's playing some of those top 6 minutes earlier in the year. And so I still think he's feeling that process out, but I think he did a good job against the Edmonton Oilers. And I think he deserves some credit for at least the way he tried to handle some of those matchups going into the series.
What can he do to get Patrick Kane going? Because generally where Kane has performed well against the Oilers, they closed down space on him relatively quickly. They didn't give him the room to operate. Even when he'd sort of, you know, curl and wait for the late man, his typical, or try to get to the perimeter to buy himself some space to skate around people, he couldn't do any of it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know, Kane averaged a point per game in that Edmonton series, and we're like, he wasn't even noticeable. You know, he wasn't even great.
Right.
And so I think that's what makes Patrick Kane so great, too. Like, even on his off nights, he's still at least producing points-wise. But, yeah, he certainly wasn't one of those guys that were jumping out on the screen like Jonathan Toews and Dominic Kubalik and Kirby Dach. And it's going to be interesting to see how they handle the lines going forward. Like, because Alex DeBrincat wasn't very noticeable either, but you know, except for that game two when they got put on the line with Doc, Kane, and DeBrincat, the three of them. And so we'll have to see. Obviously, with Dylan Strome on the third line too, you kind of wonder, like, Strome plays well with DeBrincat and Kane as well. And so how do you divvy up that ice time? And I do think once they get the power play going a little bit, like, we'll see some confidence with Patrick Kane. But he's the kind of guy where he puts the puck in the net and he's going to be buzzing around the rest of the game. So if he can get an early couple goals, I guess, in some of these games, and Patrick Kane is at his best, I think the Blackhawks, it obviously clearly gives the Blackhawks a better shot at winning.
I love the Kirby Dach story. I love watching this big kid start to realize his superpowers a little bit. It's like the montage in the superhero movie. I say, I can do this, and I can also do this. Wow, I can shoot a web out of my wrist. I can climb walls. Ha ha! How awesome is this? That's kind of how it feels to me here. And then he's starting to surprise himself perhaps a little bit. He looks big and fast and strong and smart and. And I'm not going to put an upside cap on this guy right now. Go get it. You know, go show it in the playoff series right here. Be the reason for the upset.
Yeah, honestly, the reason why the Blackhawks, a big reason why they drafted him third overall was because of the way he handled the playoffs last year in juniors. And he said every single team targeted him on a nightly basis because he was the top player playing in all situations. And not only did he take it, Stan Bowman said that they realized he also gave it back. And I think we're seeing that now. Even going into training camp this year, you can just see it. The first couple of days, you're like, holy cow, like Kirby Dach looks bigger. He looks stronger. He looks more like skating with more confidence. And then you're like, are our eyes deceiving us? Are we just trying to see what we want to see? And then you see, you know, what he does in the first series against the Edmonton Oilers. And you're like, holy cow, like this guy truly feels like he does belong in the NHL. And he's not just trying to survive anymore. He really is trying to make an impact and be a top player for the Blackhawks. And we see that because the coaching staff really did give him a significant amount of more responsibility than they did in the regular season, where he's getting power play time. He's getting much, you know, top six even strength minutes. And also he's on that first power play unit. And I think anytime you are the ice time leader among forwards and it's not Patrick Kane, well, then you're clearly doing something right, and the coaching staff is taking notice of that.
I guess what I'm saying is you want to be the guy in that jersey now. If you're showing up to watch a game somewhere, if you're showing up socially distant with friends to watch a game outside somewhere, you're going to look smart if you got the Kirby Doc jersey. And this is best of seven too, so the psychology of the series is going to feel a little different, right?
Yeah, it certainly is. Obviously, you know, going into the five game series, it really felt like game one was close to a must win, given, you know, the statistics of, but, you know, obviously that it's different in the past because those best of five series is you were traveling. And so this was obviously a little bit different because they were in the same hub, but yeah, certainly, you know, I don't know if that plays to the Blackhawks' favor that it's a seven game series and not a five game series. Maybe, you know, if you lose game one, it's not the end of the world, or, you know, you even fall behind 2-0, it's not the end of the world because, you know, the Blackhawks of the dynasty era, obviously, you know, they had a lot of those comebacks, and I know this is a different team, but psychologically, when you have Duncan Keith and Crawford and Kane and Taze in that locker room, keep having this calming presence, you know, I feel like we saw it in the Edmonton series where the leadership really stepped up too, and both on the ice and off the ice.
Charlie, really good stuff. Always enjoy having you on.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
That is Charlie Roumeliotis, the Blackhawks insider for NBC Sports Chicago. We got to get you caught up on everything that's going on in the bizarro world that is college football right now. And if you're just joining us, I also want to update you on a plan that baseball may have for a playoff bubble, because bubbles are working. They know it. They know that when they can get these players isolated and tested, that they might be more likely to not have the Cleveland situation with now Mike Clevinger. We're saying, well, yeah, I might have gone out also with Zach Plesac. So they found him and they found him out, and they're going to quarantine him too. Really enjoying the Twitch chat, twitch.tv at Chicago 670 The Score. Jay Zawoski just dropped in. Is that really you? Wow.
The real me. Yes.
The real you. And that
exciting
is
exciting for everyone.
So I don't know if I really understand what you're writing here. It's Irish Red 670. These are separate posts. It's Jay Zawoski from work. The Score.
Yeah, I want to make sure you knew it was me.
You're an idiot.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah, do enjoy the Twitch chat right now. I think there's like 60 people or so in there, and you know, people come and they go and they hang out, but it's just another place to be. You can watch what's going on, and you can be a part of everything that we're doing here at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. So touch base on a couple things. Maybe get to hear from Scott Frost of Nebraska, who's an idiot, if we have the time to do that. And then we're going to rerun Jed Hoyer, because he was really, really good, if you missed that earlier today. Dan Bernstein with you on The Score.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Dan Burstein with you on Sports Radio 670 The Score. So far, no further news out of any of the Power 5 conferences regarding a return to play or a postponement. Apparently, Big Ten ADs or presidents were meeting this morning, so there's all kinds of discussion going on. I don't know if the coaches are going to throw another Twitter tantrum or how it's all going to work, if we are going to sort of recapitulate yesterday's stupidity. My hope is that we don't, and that the smarter people are heard and the right decisions are made. On the baseball front, we have the potential of a playoff bubble of MLB, according to Jeff Passan, discussing getting these playoff teams in one place or two places, either L.A. and Chicago, Chicago and New York, or L.A. and New York. Those are the three cities that are being mentioned that each have two baseball teams and an ability to accommodate some of these larger groups of these larger playoffs. That was one of the things that Jed Hoyer talked to us about. So you're going to hear the interview with the Cubs general manager in its entirety coming up in moments on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Dan Burstein with you on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And right out of the gate at 9 o'clock, Jed Hoyer, the Cubs GM, joined us. And the first thing that I asked him was how the Cubs can turn a negative into a positive with the cancellation of the Cardinals series.
I think Rossi and the coaches did a great job with that, just realizing that, you know, this is 2020. We're going to have some things happen. We're going to have some delays and some doubleheaders and unexpected or even unwanted days off, and you just have to deal with that, and there's no point in complaining. And so they sort of made it into an all-star break, and that's kind of how they advertised it, and I think that's the right way to look at it. You know, every year we have 4 days off in the middle, and we just had 4 days off, and, you know, there's no point in thinking about anything other than the positive, which is, you know, hopefully we had some nicks and bruises and soreness that we got rid of, and, you know, let's go back and play good baseball the way we were before the break.
What has surprised you about this start?
Nothing surprised me. I think our energy has been tremendous. You know, every night our guys are into it. They come to play. You know, they know they don't have the fan energy, so they sort of bring their own. And I just love the way every night seems to be the same effort. You know, you don't win every night, but I feel like the effort's been the same every night, and that's all you can ask for. You know, I think that, you know, it hasn't been perfect by any stretch, but at the same time, it's been, from an effort level standpoint and, a clubhouse standpoint, it's been ideal. And I think that's something we can control.
Last time we talked, you mentioned that health and adherence to protocols would be a competitive advantage. And I think we're seeing how that plays out and how that can be and how you're absolutely right about that. How does it make you feel as an organization that to this point really has in painstaking fashion tried to do the right thing from top to bottom? How does it make you feel when you see not just the Marlins and the Cardinals, but specifically what just happened with Cleveland, where you had guys saying one thing publicly but doing something else?
Yeah, and I'm really proud of our guys. You know, they've taken it very seriously. And I, you know, I agree from top to bottom. We've, you know, spent the extra money where needed to make sure we could have do the right things and treat the players the right way, and the players have really responded. And I think you have to. I think that this is the kind of thing where you can do everything right and you can still have a bad situation. You know, like it's not something you can totally control, but I do think you can control making bad decisions and control a lot of it. And I think we've done a terrific job of that. And hopefully we just continue to, you know, to avoid positive tests, to keep our guys on the field. And, you know, there's a good vibe with the club as a result, because I think that they're binding together to take this really seriously. And, you know, so far it's been done really well.
But as a league, as MLB, you're all in this together. And it just has to be immensely frustrating when you see other teams. And I don't know if there's just different internal messaging or there's teams that aren't listening to what the league is saying, if it's not sort of standardized. But, I mean, what's your response when you hear about what happens with Plesac or with Clevinger, and that the team that Cleveland didn't even find out until later that Clevinger had also been out? I mean, that's their responsibility to contact trace and isolate. You know, your response got to be like, come on, you know, why can't everybody do what you're doing?
Well, I mean, Cleveland as an organization, you know, from top to bottom is fantastic, and I think this has been a great eye opener. I think, you know, when an organization that does things the right way, that takes these protocols really seriously, when they have a situation like this, it makes you realize that we really just have to kind of stay on message and keep reemphasizing it, because as I think I've said on the show before, you know, this isn't the kind of thing you can say, we did a great job, we're through the woods. I mean, you have to do this every day as long as you're playing. You can never kind of let up that vigilance. And I think that, you know, in Cleveland's situation, they'd been in a great situation. And hopefully this didn't result in an outbreak, but they certainly had a lapse. And I think you realize you just can't have any of those lapses. And listen, I understand from the player standpoint, I think there's an exhaustion element to it. It's taxing, it's tiresome. And I think that's what we have to avoid, is that, you know, right now we're only like 3 weeks into the season. We've been doing this, I guess, since around 4th of July. You know, we have a lot more to go. And I think that there's an endurance factor that we have to really push, because you can't get tired. You can't get bored of it. You have to just keep doing it.
Do you think the reclamation project for Craig Kimbrell, based on everything you said very candidly, talking about where he is and what he has to do, what are your goals for him this year? If this thing works, does he just come back full bore to be something resembling the closer he was?
It's hard to say. I think I would say this. Like, I've seen some strange things over the years where a guy is struggling as bad as you can imagine, and then something clicks and he's right back to himself. And I'll use a hitting example. You know, in 2010, I just left, but, you know, David Ortiz went, you know, beginning of the season, he couldn't hit a fastball over 88 miles an hour. And it just looked like, oh my God, he's, you know, this might be over. And the next thing you know, like, you know, a couple adjustments later, and he's back to Big Poppy, and he's hitting balls all over the ballpark. And you think, wait, what did I just watch for 6 weeks? And I've seen that happen time and time again, where a guy is really struggling, and then all of a sudden something clicks in and he's back. And I mean, so yeah, I think that, you know, right now, I think there's real mechanical struggles, you know, going on with Craig, and he's not himself. And the way you know that is he's getting hit. You know, this is a guy that's gone, you know, 10-year major league career without getting hit, you know, and, all of a sudden, you know, his ball is finding some barrels. And when that's happening, you know that there's something mechanical going on. I think we've identified it, but it's hard to make those changes. And so we're working hard to do that. But I do think that, you know, if it clicks and he sort of figures out those cues and can get back to where he normally is, yeah, there's no reason to think that he can't get right back to where he was. It's not always a gradual improvement. Sometimes it's just you snap your fingers and the guy gets back to doing the things he's supposed to do.
Well, the data doesn't lie. I've seen multiple studies. Baseball Prospectus did one, and Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic put a bunch of stuff together. It's where the ball's coming out of his hand and how that's shaping his pitches. The release point has dropped, and it's absolutely changed everything. It's easy to say he can get into pitch lab and look at everything slowed down and say, yeah, release it here instead of here. Why is it so much harder than that?
Adrenaline, honestly. You know, I think that, you know, not to use golf as the example, but it's easy to you know, in a golf lesson, to hit balls straight and to do those things. And, you know, when you get on the tee and the wind's blowing in your face, it's hard to slow everything down and calm down and not swing harder. And I think that players are no different. You know, that when you get into a game in competition, it's really hard to remember the things you're working on and to not do them. And some of the things you're doing are the adrenaline creates some of those problems. And that's really the issue. You know, we tell our players all the time, we tell them, you know, you need to, there's times to work on your mechanics, and there's times to improve your mechanics, and there's times you have to go compete and beat the guy at the plate or beat the pitcher. And so in some ways, like, these guys are doing what they're what they're told. You know, they get into the game and it's competition time. And it's really hard to get into a game and face a major league hitter in a big situation and slow everything down and focus on those mechanics. And so in some ways there's a muscle memory aspect of it that has to click in before you can really do it. Otherwise you're going to revert back to that bad habit when you have to, you know, beat that guy at the plate.
And these decisions about the back end of the bullpen, about these high leverage spots, have to be made regarding a playoff push in 20 days. The trade deadline is less than 3 weeks away, which to me is almost incomprehensible. So I want to talk about two aspects of this. First of all, your self-evaluation, and then how you look at the rest of the league and the usual poker game that is kind of a slow walk that in this case really isn't. What is the internal assessment going on right now? Even though you hate to do it, you have to do it.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I think at this point we've played 13 games, so I mean, it's really difficult. I mean, I think that obviously our bullpen struggled out of the gate. I think it's thrown better, you know, of late certainly, and you know, I think that everyone's done a good job of identifying some of the guys that are throwing well and getting those guys in the right spots, and it's been better. But you know, certainly, you know, in any year you're always looking to bolster the bullpen. Especially in a year, you're going to be looking to do that in a year where, you know, there's going to be, you know, more injuries and potentially more guys out and even a bigger roster. So, but yeah, I think that's going to be really difficult. And I think that, as a result, I think that there's going to be a lot of action as you get really close to that deadline, because people are going to want to use all the time possible for those self-assessments. And also, I mean, with, you know, 16 teams out of 30 making the playoffs, there's going to be, and a lot of teams in the race as a result, you know, I think that teams are going to want a lot of time before they have to decide what they want to do as well, you know, and in order to be a buyer, there has to be a seller, and identifying those sellers is harder this year than some years. So I think there'll be a wait and see approach, and I think that we'll get action as you get closer to that end of the month date.
Is it also then difficult to explore your, on the pro personnel side, obviously there's opportunity in this sort of chaos and uncertainty of maybe unearthing a target that you wouldn't otherwise have seen because of the larger rosters? Are, you know, maybe some guys are getting promoted ahead of time? Are you getting some looks at some players you didn't think you would otherwise get?
Yeah, our pro department is doing a great job right now, and they're, you know, working hard to identify all the right guys. But you're right. It does seem almost surreal to be talking about a trade deadline when we played 13 games, you know, and it's crazy, but that's the world we're in. And all we can do is make the best of it. So yeah, we'll certainly be active in trying to identify the right guys to help us.
Hearing reports this morning, Jeff Passan says that MLB is looking at the success of the NBA bubble and the NHL bubble and thinking that if this playoff thing is going to work, they might have to approach it similarly. Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York are being looked at potentially as places to convene pods of playoff teams. Where is your knowledge of these discussions right now?
Probably about the level of the article. I mean, I know that they've been exploring it, and it makes a lot of sense to explore it. The Marlins and the Cardinals outbreaks happen on the road, and you know, one of the things that happens in the playoffs is you travel a lot. You know, travel in the playoffs is harder to schedule. You know, you're going to play a 2 out of 3 series, and you're going to play a 3 out of 5 series, and you know, if you're traveling, I know you're not traveling during the, you know, multiple times during the first round, but you know, if you're traveling multiple times each round, you're just adding to the possibility of having exposures. And I think given that travel, and a lot of it's really late at night and like I said, unplanned, I think the right thing to do is to talk about it. Like, can we have a neutral site bubble for the postseason? Will that, you know, keep everyone safe? I think for multiple reasons. Obviously you want to get through the playoffs and make sure we complete it once we start it. I think that's number one. But even number two is, You want the best teams to, and all the teams to stay healthy, so the best team really, you know, goes forward. And you know, having outbreaks, even if they're small during the postseason, just limits the ability to make sure that teams are at full strength. So I think the NBA and NHL have done a great job with this, and I think it's probably not. It wasn't feasible for us to do it for a whole season. There's just too many people and too many games. But I do think that when you're talking about a month and you're talking about a playoff that you know, a bubble that keeps getting smaller as the playoffs eliminate teams, I think there's a lot of logic to discussing it, given the fact that travel is so difficult.
What have you learned at this point about the game itself in this season without fans, and how that affects the way you watch or the way you communicate in game? Are you trying to keep it as similar as possible? You know, maybe sitting up in the box with Theo having a beer, or are you closer to the action? Is it easier to have in-game communication, or are you keeping things the way it would otherwise be?
So I think the in-game part is sort of the surreal part for us, because there's probably 10 people in the whole stands, and you know, we're sitting back in the scout section watching, and you know, they have the crowd noise loud enough. You can't really hear that much on the field, but it's just strange to be in Wrigley Field, an incredible setting, and with 10 people watching a game. I think the part for me that I'm most impressed with is that the intensity of the game is the same. I didn't know if that was going to happen. I didn't know what the product would look like without fans. And I think we've seen some really impressive baseball. We've seen really good games and really crisp play, and watching these teams go at it, I think it makes you realize, I think, A, how good they are as players, and B, you realize that these guys have played games in front of no fans or a few fans for most of their life, right? That these guys grew up playing in, you know, high school, you know, junior high, high school games that didn't have many fans, or even some summer league games or minor league games that were, you know, sparsely attended, and they're competing. And I think that they don't, you know, I thought the fans would have more to do with the quality of play at a crispness, and it really hasn't. And I think that's been really impressive. And then the other thing is, I think the pitching is ahead of the hitting still. Some of that is just where the game is right now in general, that pitching is so good and so dominant that it's hard to hit. And then some of it probably is that the pitching was able to get more stuff done during the layoff and they're still ahead. But you know, when you see batting averages this low as a league, there's definitely some cause for concern. And I hope that as we keep playing, that'll go up a little bit.
Talking with Jed Hoyer on Sports Radio 670, WSCR, The Score, the general manager of the Chicago Cubs. What is happening that we're not seeing on the development side? Without a minor league season, how are you keeping tabs on prospects and making sure that you're keeping the value of those prospects as high as possible when so many of them aren't playing baseball?
Yeah, I think our player development department's done a fantastic job of that, and they're in constant communication with our guys. And you know, there's a variety of different setups. You know, some guys are able to throw full bullpens all the time and throw to hitters, and some guys aren't. But you know, I think we've sort of looked at it as it's all relative. That obviously playing, you know, a full minor league season is the best thing for these guys. I don't think there's any question about that. But you know, in the absence of that, if we can improve our players more than other teams, even if they wouldn't have improved as much as if they played a season, if it's better that relative to other teams, then that's still real progress. And so we just have to view it that way, is we have to develop our players and be more creative with our players than other teams are. And if we can do that, I think we can be successful. And it's taken a lot of diligence from our guys, and I think they've done a great job. And I think even going back to what I just said about hitting and pitching, I think from a pitching standpoint, I think you're able to do more with arm strength or pitch design or mechanics than you are with hitting. Hitting's really hard to improve without reps against the best pitching. And I think that's our ultimate challenge. I think it's harder to develop or continue to stay in the same progression with offensive players than it is with pitchers.
When do you expect Jose Quintana back, and what are you seeing with the ball coming out of his hand?
Well, he's throwing three innings today, and that'll be a good test for him. And I mean, listen, I think he says he feels great. You know, he worked so hard, you know, prior to this, and I think he was primed to have a really big season, and then he got hurt, and he's working his way back. But I think he's going to get back to where he should be. But, you know, I think he's still in the process of doing that, and today is going to be a big test for him, you know, throwing three innings.
Well, here's to a successful restart and onward with all the positive energy with this surprisingly efficient and interesting Cubs team this year. Before I want to mention this too, Jed, and because I said this just as an observer, this has been the way the Cubs have played has been so satisfying as opposed to the last couple years when it's just been, and we hear it in Jed's frustration, in Theo's frustration in his postseason press conferences, of the runners on base that don't get knocked in, of the walks that are issued, or a play that's not made in the field. For some reason, in just this early start, not only has the record shown it, as an observer, as a fan, on so many levels, it's really been satisfying. And I guess that's a testament to David Ross, but it's just how I've felt watching the team play.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to that, and I think that there's a there's a crispness that I feel like we've played with, an energy and a crispness, and that I think is besides rundowns,
right.
But there's an energy and a crispness that we play with that's been really satisfying, and I think part of the reason that we were frustrated the last couple of years is that we saw this team and mostly the same players play that way, 15, 16, the second half of 17, where you just felt like we didn't make mistakes. We made all the right plays. It was an immensely satisfying group of players to watch. And I think that we got away from some of those things last couple of years with our defense and our base running. And it feels like we're right back there. I think, the left side of the infield in particular has played, fantastic, defense this year. And I feel like we're on the road back to where I think we need to be in that regard. And it's the margin for error in our division is really small. And I think that, giving extra outs on the bases or giving extra outs on defense is going to kill you in our division. And I just think that we've done an excellent job so far of, taking care of our outs and playing inspired baseball. And I think it's shown so far.
That's Jed Hoyer among our guests today. That also included James Fegan and Charlie Rumeliotis. We thank Jay Zawoski, Ray Diaz, Brian Gertz, who had the video feed. And thanks everybody in that Twitch conversation. That's going to really be a lot of fun. There are like 60 people at one point all just kind of going wild in that chat. So it's going to be a fun place. Lawrence Holmes is coming up. He's got David Ross for his usual Tuesday hit. I'm going on kind of a vacation, I guess, for the next 3 days. So I'm taking our daughter to college. My wife and son and I, all four of us, we are headed into Ohio because we're all old enough that I am going to have a child in college. So wish me luck. I may be tweeting every once in a while to keep you updated on how this all goes. But really, this family in a car for 6 hours wishes all more than luck. So Lawrence Holmes is straight ahead. I will talk with you on Monday at 9 a.m. Keep doing what you're doing and keep listening to doctors. And we'll talk on Monday. Matt Spiegel will have you in good hands.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.